Hey everyone, welcome to Office Hours with Cloud Posse, where we discuss the latest DevOps news, trends, AWS announcements, Terraform insights, all sourced from our SuiteOps community. Plus, we'll have a live Q&A at the end you can't find anywhere else. It is June 25th, 2025. I'm your host, Eric Osterman. Real quick, I'm the founder and CEO of Cloud Posse. Cloud Posse sells AWS reference architectures that get you production ready in less than 2 weeks. So if you're curious, go to cloudposse.com. Now, for how you can maximize today's session, first off, the format is very informal. You can engage as much as you'd like and ask questions. And if you're curious about any of our open source tools like Atmos, this is a great place to ask. And for those on the recording, we host these calls live, so don't miss out. Join us by registering at cloudposse.com/officehours, cloudposse.com/officehours. Now, I do have one ask. If you find any portion of today's session valuable, share it with your team. Just go over to youtube.com/cloudposse, where you'll find a recording of today's session in a couple hours. So with that said, let's jump into what caught my attention this week. So first one, this was something that Matt shared with me. So this is kind of cool. Pulumi now allows you to call out to Terraform modules directly as part of your logic. So if you're using Pulumi, that's something you can now start to use. Next announcement was something that I saw via Hacker News this week, and it just caught me by surprise. I didn't know about this feature. And not to burst your bubble, it isn't that practical in practice, even though it has a lot of potential. So what's cool about this is it basically lets you annotate any commit with additional metadata as well. And people have built tooling around this, including some people at Google who had created something called Git Appraise for a fully like offline Git-based code review system. Unfortunately, back in 2014 or so, I think it was, GitHub ripped out support for these Git notes, and therefore it's not that practical. What it does now is it just smashes all the content together, so it's not clearly separated out from the Git comments, Git commit messages themselves. That said, I think it would be pretty cool if GitHub reintroduced support for that, and we had a way to provide more metadata associated with commits. Has anybody else played around with this or used this in the past?
I was actually curious. You know how sometimes when you use tooling, they append another comment to the commit to kind of do some self-promo, self-advertising? Is this related to that?
Oh, I mean, it could. Oh, that would be interesting. Is that tooling using Git notes and that's why it looks smashed together? I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, could be. As you see here, like Git notes, Sonar Cube posting something. So that could be happening.
Right. Because I know at least recently I saw Claude Code. If you were to use Claude Code to make your commits, it does this little append where it adds itself as a commit author as well.
That's interesting. I was going to say that would be one usage of Git notes. I was actually thinking a little different. It could actually augment it with the prompt that was used to create that code. But
That's fancy.
yeah. Next thing that caught my attention was a write-up by Chorus on how they adopted Claude Code. And an example of their full Claude.md that they use to describe the project and the workflow that the Claude code should take when vibing with you, so to say. Curious, anybody using Claude Code who also has maybe checked out Codex by OpenAI and kind of strengths and weaknesses between those? Or if you're using Claude Code daily, I'd love to know too how you're finding that experience.
I started using Claude Code daily a couple of weeks ago after primarily using RuCode as the VS extension with a myriad of different API keys. I think overall there's been a little bit of a shift in the way that I have to do the planning stages. And a lot of that is a little bit of a black box with Claude Code. But it has been fairly successful so far.
And in the planning stages, do you mean kind of in the prompt design or spending more time developing the prompt, or what were your thoughts there?
I more like before asking it to actually implement a feature, just kind of like staying in the conversational type of mode, which in Roo you can force with their architecture or orchestration kind of modes, whereas for Claude Code it's a little bit different. But yeah, just kind of like figuring out the to-do list of how to go about accomplishing the feature before implementing it. So yeah, like I said, with Claude Code it's a little bit more of a black box, and a lot of that orchestration happens without you having a whole lot of control over it. But the output seems to be pretty good, and I like the price point for the Claude Max. The 20x at $200 actually seems to be a decent deal.
And that made me think about my follow-up to last week. We did a quick demonstration of Codex by OpenAI. And this week I encountered a lot more rough edges with it. And I'm a lot more inclined to try Claude Code as a result. Full disclosure, I did not try using the Codex local CLI. Maybe that addresses these issues. The problem that I found with Codex, which is a similar solution by OpenAI, is the environments don't have GitHub access. And I was using it with Atmos and trying to see if it could address some things. And we depend on a lot of Go modules, and it keeps on timing out doing a Go mod or a Go install on those modules. Because it hits GitHub rate limits. So then you have to install a GitHub API key to get around that as a secret. I didn't want to go that far. So the other challenge is it's not a Git checkout. So any of your tooling that uses Git as part of your repo won't work in that Codex environment. So I'm guessing none of those problems would exist if you're using Claude Code since it's all running on your local checkouts.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Oops. Next one was this is a little bit of a clickbaity title, but it is true. So some security researchers uncovered a trove of usernames, passwords, credit card information, in other words, that has been aggregated as part of all of these malware databases that have been harvesting users' credentials. So it's not like any of these sites have been hacked or databases compromised from them. It's that the malware software itself has been compromised. Some researchers uncovered a database which aggregated some 16 billion login credentials in there. Obviously, a large percentage are probably invalid, but based on their research, this is the first time this leak has been exposed, and there were a lot of valid credentials there. So I'm guessing we'll see that showing up on Have I Been Pwned any day now. Anyone know more about this or like the origins of the leak? All right.
I think you're right in that I saw a tweet from the Have I Been Pwned guy, I think Troy Hunt, and he mentioned something along the lines of it is clickbaity in that it is quote unquote a new breach, but none of the information, none of the data is new itself. And I think that was one of the reasons why, as of yet, it's not been populated on his database yet. He's usually on top of these kind of things.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so maybe there was a huge overlap with what he already has. Have I
Right.
Pwned has been pwned, maybe. No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding. That was not true. All right. The next announcement was interesting, I thought. Let's Encrypt has been a pretty stable platform. I forget, like, how long has it been out now? Was it more than 10 years or even more than that? I forget, but we take it for granted as it's always been there now. And all this time it hasn't supported IPs, and it wasn't because of them. It's because the consortium of browser companies hadn't agreed on how to support IP-based certificates. So that has apparently a couple of years ago been lifted, and now there is an agreement on how that would be supported as part of the SANS portion of a certificate. Let's Encrypt is making updates to eventually support this. This means that IPs, you cannot use HTTPS to access IPs with signed certificates, which isn't something you could do before. Use cases for that might be like P2P type transfers or IoT devices. Another exciting announcement, if you're using Atmos this week, we haven't the release is forthcoming. It'll probably be today or tomorrow, but we just merged this PR, which has been a long requested feature in Atmos. So we added flags, these flags here, and this makes it really powerful. So now you can run operations like plan or apply or deploy, and specifically target, say, absolutely everything, or target everything in a particular stack, or target what was affected. And this is the most important, this is the coolest part. So this basically looks at the git diff between two commits, evaluates the stack configuration between those and the differences and what was affected, and then can apply in dependency order all of those components. Just a caveat right now in full disclosure, that dependency order functionality right now is only applying to affected. We have not added it yet to the all flag. So we're going to do that as a fast follow to this pull request, but it's not there yet. And the other thing you can do is use the query parameter. So if you're familiar with the GitHub CLI, the GH CLI, it has something similar to this, like a query param that allows you to filter the results using a JQ-YQ type of expression. Well, this allows you to do the same for these operations with the query parameter. So, really advanced way of targeting slices of your infrastructure. And we provide a bunch of examples down here. So here's an example of filtering for some metadata and applying, some command on that. For this to work, you do need to specify explicitly the dependencies between your components. So we don't dynamically try and guess what the relationship is between components. In a stack, you explicitly say what they are. Another key gotcha is you need to express your dependencies as maps. It's ugly, and I wish we didn't have to do that right now, but the main reason is for it to deep merge very cleanly. So this allows us to sort it lexicographic to deep merge, sort lexicographically, and apply an order.
So just to clarify, to use this feature, we have to have depends on for each of our stack values. Gotcha.
Yeah, for each of the components in the stack, yeah.
Cool.
All right. Next thing is to talk. We talked a little bit about this as 1.10 OpenTofu was in as a release candidate, I believe. There's some really awesome features. This is a really meaningful release of OpenTofu, tons of stuff. So first thing is first class OCI support. And we're not talking Oracle Cloud, right? This is open container registries. So you can now source your modules from any OCI compatible registry. That includes GitHub container registry. That includes ECR. Both are OCI compatible. What I really want to see from Cloud Posse is we'll start publishing our modules that way. And why is that cool? For multiple reasons. So first is that you don't need to stand up yet another service to host your modules and providers. You can just use OCI, which is supported by every major cloud provider. The other reason is you can separate artifacts from source. So today, in a monorepo, for example, it's quite painful to host Terraform modules, especially if you want to support different versions. Because you still need an artifact of each version of that module. And this lets you publish an artifact of that as part of the container registry of Git that GitHub provides. It's the third reason is OCI is just so much faster than using any of the other options out there. If you've seen how fast Docker pools are, given the size of Docker images, you know, Terraform modules are teeny tiny, they're going to be even faster. Native S3 locking. So this is something that was introduced in Terraform BSL. I forget with what release. Now OpenTofu has feature parity with that. So you no longer need to provision a separate DynamoDB. You can just specify use lock file instead. If you're using Atmos, there's nothing Atmos needs to do to support this. You just need to make sure you're passing this parameter in your backend configuration. Atmos just serializes the backend configuration as JSON. So that's why we didn't need to do anything in Atmos to support this. The next thing is support for OpenTelemetry tracing. So you can now submit all the traces from running OpenTofu to an OTel endpoint and then get performance information. Now, bear in mind, probably the most useful part of that OTel information would be what's inside of a provider, and that is not implemented as part of that because that would obviously require providers to make a change and a change to the provider SDK. Another interesting one that we talked about on Office Hours before was introduction of a target file. So you could call this like lightweight stacks, kind of. You know, you could always run Terraform plan dash target, and if you were a savant and could intuit what every single resource was there, or you looked at the Terraform graph and did that, you could construct that. I thought it was a pretty clever, very probably trivially simple thing to implement was the concept of a target file. So now you can manifest in a file the resources that you want to target for certain kinds of operations, for example. And then you could think of those resources or resource groups kind of as a stack within the root module. This is one way of looking at it, at least from my perspective. Any other parts you want to call out from this release? Anyone?
I think there was a really recent follow-up as well, isn't there, for the user agent that needed to be.
Yeah, we were bit by that. So Atmos sets its user agent as part of this. There's an environment variable that Terraform supports called this, which allows you to add metadata to the user agent, which then shows up in logs, for example. So we do this to pass Atmos, the version of Atmos used with everything. But when this was released, it started to fail, and that was due to a change in the AWS SDK. Both in the AWS SDK and in the Terraform AWS provider. It's really interesting if you read through here, is that the chain, we don't know why the changes were made in the AWS SDK. All right, let's see, where is it? Because it was done under NDA, so the changes were necessarily vague, the description. Earlier I mistakenly referred to the Terraform AWS provider. The provider has nothing to do with backends, and what I'm talking about here is backends, and backends are in the core. So this is strictly a change in the SDK. And what is interesting is they've introduced part of the SDK some APN info, and APN is Amazon's partner network. So for those who are less familiar with like the AWS partner ecosystem, this is how companies like Cloud Posse work together with AWS and share leads, and they help us close deals, vice versa. But I'm really curious what this APN info is about, and if it's some way to augment the metadata shared with AWS and tie it back to some Amazon partner relationship. But this is just me totally postulating. I have no idea what this is about. I'm curious if anyone knows more about what this APN info is.
You'd think Amazon would be more forthright about these sort of data, especially when it's concerning their partners.
I'm a little disappointed with AWS and what they've done in their how they manage partners these days, at least partners like us. We used to have a dedicated partner rep we could talk to and ask anything, and they'd go find figure it out for us or ask the right people. Now we get an email list we can email, and not as helpful.
That's where I remember you finding this, like within minutes of the launch, and I was curious, do you have some sort of automated testing, or was it just pure chance and an engineer just was trying it out at the time?
No, it was the latter. So Igor, one of our avid users of Atmos, posted immediately after this was released. He tried upgrading and tried using it. Presumably, I'm guessing just because he probably wanted to use the log file based approach, maybe, and then found out that it didn't work. So I was worried it was something that was deprecated or removed, and we wouldn't be able to do that anymore. Fortunately, it was just a change of implementation. This has already been fixed in main. I don't know that a release has been cut yet. Let's see what really where we are with releases. Oh, cut 3 hours ago. Yep, so this was fixed in 1.10.1. So thank you, OpenTofu, for showing you how fast you can turn around a fix for something like that. That's cool. All right. See, so we covered that. So then I saw that 1.13 of BSL Terraform Alpha, which is a pre-release, was just cut. And everybody's been asking about, like, so in the announcements of stacks for BSL Terraform, they said over time some of that functionality would be making its way into the CLI. This seems to be following through with that in some degree. I'm not, it's vague here what this will do. But what stood out to me, depend on the Stacks plugin implementation. And that made me wonder, I wonder if they're going to make plugins pluggable, or if I'm reading too much into it. If they make it pluggable, that'd be really cool. All right. No one has any insights on that one? All right. The next announcement will make InfoSec teams excited. The IAM Access Analyzer now can identify who in your organization can access specific resources. And the way of thinking about this is now you can see what are all the access vectors to that lead to accessing a given resource. So from a compliance perspective, that's pretty nice. And this is surfaced in a dashboard. I was really actually surprised by the number of announcements this week that caught my attention. There's always so many, but most of them are pretty boring. And the next announcement was this, is that Certificate Manager now actually allows you to export public certificates that you can use anywhere. For example, inside of Nginx if you wanted to, or on-prem in some infrastructure, managed consistently through the Certificate Manager. They aren't cheap per se, so be careful about using them, for example, for preview environments or something, or every preview might cost you 15 bucks. The other interesting use case this opens up is, are we going to see support for this now in Cert Manager? So Cert Manager, which is the operator for Kubernetes that can automatically set up TLS certificates for load balancers, hasn't been able to do that for Kubernetes outside of PCA, private CA, because there was no way to install the certificate in Kubernetes itself. You could always associate with the ALB load balancer controller the ARN of a ACM certificate. That works fine, but you couldn't create it on demand. Maybe this opens up the door for that. Actually, let's see if somebody's already opened up a request for that. You know how fast these things go. Let's see here. Doesn't look yet like, oh, request is, yeah, here, exportable certificate. So somebody has already opened up a request for this last week. So that'll be interesting. And then, sorry, Eric, I didn't see your messages in the Zoom chat, going back a couple topics here. So, any concerns for OpenTofu diverging from Terraform with coding standards based on community preferences? So coding standards, well, I guess if coding standards are leaning on functional differences between BSL Terraform and OpenTofu, then yeah, that'll and those divergences will be problematic. And I'll be candid, I haven't, we haven't spent time too concerned yet worrying about those differences. But for example, now in child modules, if you're using OCI endpoints, those won't work with BSL Terraform. And BSL Terraform decided that OCI was Oracle Cloud Infrastructure and not Open Container Initiative. Don't get me started on that one. So I haven't answered your question directly, but yeah, I'm concerned. I'm sticking my head in the sand right now for that. What I don't want to have happen is that we need a layer like TypeScript is to JavaScript, so we can get a version of Terraform code that works for BSL Terraform and a version that works for OpenTofu. I'm curious if anyone has, like, as a proof of concept, already written something like that. But that's where we're headed. Or the alternative is this, and it's a gray area. So by convention, the Terraform modules, the naming format is supposed to be Terraform dash provider dash friendly name or whatever convention after that. It's not opinionated after that. Probably what this means as the divergence between Terraform and OpenTofu increases is we're going to have fragmentation where there will literally be there will have to be a parallel OpenTofu dash AWS dash the equivalent module. So that means that we would go from, 200 Terraform modules to 400 Terraform modules for marginal value. There is one consideration with that, but it's hard to it's a non-trivial, in my opinion, to manage at the scale that we do, which is the dot was it dot tofu extension, which allows you to have tofu specific code in tofu files that won't be read by BSL Terraform. That is one way to get around these issues. Yeah, we'll cross that bridge down the road. Anyone else dealing with this already can share their experiences. Let's see here.
I think the naming of the OCI is the most recent breaking change between the two, isn't it? Because BSL Terraform uses the Oracle OCI definition,
Yeah.
and the OpenTofu OCI does the Open Container one.
Yeah.
Wonder how many other kind of differences are kind of going to creep up over time.
Yeah, there'll inevitably be a lot. I mean, it's just like different browsers supporting different versions of JavaScript, right?
Right.
It's gonna be that.
We don't know how lucky we have it until we don't.
So, Eric, with Atmos at that point, like, how do you guys incorporate the divergence with OpenTofu and Terraform? Continue to support both, IAC
Yeah.
clients or, some stuff.
No, that's a great question. And speaking candidly, we are predominantly focused on supporting OpenTofu because the HashiCorp BSL makes it pretty clear that if you provide any sort of competing service, even if it's for free, and you provide support for it that you pay for,
Sure. So, like,
you're violating the BSL. So
sorry.
we'll provide a best effort support for BSL Terraform, but we aren't, it's not our primary focus.
So, are you recommending to clients to move to OpenTofu,
Oh,
like
yeah,
that
absolutely.
path? Okay. All
Yeah.
right.
So if you
Cool.
go to docs.cloudposse.com and OpenTofu.
Yeah, I saw how to change Atmos to like call OpenTofu versus Terraform. Just I was curious, like, what do you guys as a business are telling clients, like, hey, look
Yeah.
at OpenTofu, don't look at Terraform anymore, kind of thing.
So we have this design decision I'll post in the chat, which is summarizing this more or less. There have at when this was written, there were some things that weren't yet finalized, such as approval into CNCF. That has now happened, so it is officially a CNCF incubator project. But yeah, this goes through our analysis of the situation, our recommendation, but ultimately it's a decision for whatever your legal department is. It's sad when a technical decision is actually a legal decision.
Sure.
So hence this admonition.
As a side note, we recently went through an OpenTofu migration. We moved from Terraform BSL 1.56 to OpenTofu 1.62. We have about 200 Atmos stacks, probably close to like 40,000 AWS resources under management, and like I want to say close to 1600 Spacelift stacks, and we did it within a day, no issues whatsoever. It was such a smooth transition, and I feel like we've really benefited from it so far. So that was a really positive experience for us.
Oh, that's great. That's great. All right, let's see. So, back to my announcements here. I think there was one or two more, if I can find my mouse. There we go. So we talked about Certificate Manager. Okay, no, that was it. We covered all the announcements. Cool. So this is the Q&A portion. First, anybody have any other cool announcements that caught their attention this past week? Eric, you also had another question for the end. Any worries about Pulumi announcement and how Pulumi is starting to become more predominant in the market? You know, I wish I. So, if Pulumi is getting more market share. Well, you know, first, hey, good for them. It wasn't easy, and they've stuck it out longer than a lot of companies in the space. You know, Winglang took a different approach, and they didn't make it. Pulumi taking or doing more with Terraform is, to me, maybe signaling other things as well. Maybe it's a necessity to play more with Terraform. I am unfortunately in an echo chamber, and my echo chamber means that I hear only things about Terraform and mostly Terraform. So that is a blind side for me to know how things are going outside of that ecosystem. You know, I'll never forget going to re:Invent and talking to a bunch of people there. You know, saying that, you know, we're one of the largest providers of Terraform modules, and they're all, oh, what's Terraform, right? So I kind of feel like, you know, it's taken for granted everybody even knows what Terraform is, and that's not the case when the number of companies using CloudFormation probably dwarfs Terraform 10 to 1 on AWS, I'm guessing. Just a hunch, but so what does this mean for Pulumi taking up more of a share? You know, as recently as today, I spoke to another company that has had a negative experience using Pulumi, and that, you know, that again, that is confirmation bias, because why are they talking to us? Well, they have an experience with Pulumi, right? That biases things. But when things don't work, it's the same reason they don't work. And this is the reason, and it has nothing to do with Terraform, infrastructure as code, Pulumi, et cetera. It has nothing to do with all of those. It is it's just a software engineering problem, if you will. And let me explain. The problem is that it isn't whether you use Pulumi or Terraform or CDK or CloudFormation that is going to be the differentiator for whether your project is going to be successful or not. It's going to be that you have a consistent way of delivering services that your team understands. Good or bad, it is consistent. Your team understands it. It is documented. It has evolved with your company, and you don't have 10 versions of that strategy. And what so often happens when companies go and start to create their next gen platform is they do an assessment of what are the tools available right now. They gather their requirements, which are never really requirements. They are nice to haves that you prioritize and rank order with what you can get done in an amount of time. And then they go to build it. But because developers are optimists when it comes to writing their own code and writing their own implementation, the level of effort is radically minimized to what they're trying to achieve. But what they actually need to do is totally unknown, and they achieve, you know, some small fraction of what they actually set out to do. And then that takes so long, so business priorities shift. So then they go on and move on to the next thing, and then this, you know, the cloud one becomes cloud two, and cloud two becomes cloud three, and now you have cloud one, two, three, four, and none of those versions of their platform has ever succeeded in delivering on the promise of what they set out to do. So what I see happen when you pick Pulumi or something like this is that it's aligning for a logical, rational reason. Hey, we are a TypeScript shop. Our developers know TypeScript. We should write our infrastructure in TypeScript, so we do it. Or we're a Go shop. We want to write our infrastructure in Go, so we go do it. And that's the thing about Pulumi, is that you can pick your language and do it in any one of these things. And on the surface, that sounds wonderful. But the problem is the infrastructure isn't your competitive advantage. It's your product that's the competitive advantage. And the language du jour is constantly changing, or the language you're going to use in your at your company will change as well for the different things that you kind of do. And having the ability to write your infrastructure in any language to me is a disadvantage. So what I see happen when companies then go with something like Pulumi is then they go out, build half of or a quarter of what they need or half of what they need. They never finish the project. And they spent a lot more time doing it when they could have just taken some infrastructure off the shelf that works, has been proven. And you can find a lot of Terraform engineers. I don't know if you can find as many Pulumi engineers out there. Maybe the argument is you don't need a Pulumi engineer. You could just need a regular engineer. I don't know. Anyone have a counterargument?
I'm gonna back you up and say, Pulumi, when you have a full stack dev who is your acting as your DevOps person, then you end up with Pulumi because they know their language and they want to write it in that. And then when an actual DevOps person who's more, ops based comes around, then they have to convert all that crap to Terraform. So, that's how. And the big difference for me is one is procedural and one is declarative, right? Like Pulumi is more like how developers write code, and Terraform was more like how ops people want to have their infrastructure as code. So that's the big difference, I think, for me.
A difference in mindset there, yeah.
Yeah.
So.
With that being said, I will still never excuse Terraform for not supporting if else. It's ridiculous.
It's some things get really ugly in Terraform because of things like that. But I think there's other things like we've argued back and forth on Terraform. So on the one hand, Terraform shouldn't prevent you from doing anything. On the other hand, I think some of the things Terraform prevents you from doing are actually good things, like provider for each. One of the most common request things was to be able to do provider for each over a bunch of resources across a whole lot of regions. But the whole reason to have things in multiple regions is usually for DR. And if you have all of that in one Terraform state file, you kind of broke that that promise, that contract. So that was an example of like where I think it does something actually in our favor. But yeah, I agree. It's a obtuse way of expressing some things in Terraform.
Yeah. And I think where my background comes from was like writing bash scripts for infrastructure stuff and writing Python for infrastructure stuff. So now I'm having to force myself into this declarative language that prohibits me from doing things like I could normally just do like in a script. Or yeah, I can tell Terraform like, hey, call this local script and have this local script do whatever. That's kind of like you're skirting the language then at that point. So like you're not really being true to form to the language. You're skirting it, which I mean everybody does, right? So that I think that's where I was kind of like, I love hearing people talk about Pulumi versus Terraform. It's like yeah, Pulumi, it's more like actual coding developer centric where Terraform or OpenTofu or whatever is more like, oh, you're ops minded, like it's got to be black and white. There's no gray area whatsoever. That's it. Which is frustrating from somebody who I guess tangles both worlds. Like as a DevOps person, like you tangle both worlds. Like you're a developer, but you're also ops minded. Like you're doing both things. So it's like that's the frustrating part.
Well said. So let's see here. So that was a good question. Thanks for asking that. Any other questions we can discuss today from anyone?
So do you see, yeah, so I'll get back on the Pulumi tip. Do you see Atmos potentially supporting Pulumi or any sort of other like IACs like Ansible or Chef kind of thing?
Absolutely. Short answer, yes, absolutely. Longer answer, tacking onto my shorter answer was, and this is why if you look at Atmos stack configurations, the tool chain is a factor of components. So it's components dot Terraform dot things for Terraform. And I would love to support things like ECS tasks in there, Ansible playbooks for that, or even maybe a custom definition of a type of component there. I know Michael Rosenfeld, who spoke up a little bit earlier, he briefly went down part of this path. I don't know how far you got, but my point with this is I would like to, but everything we do in Atmos is mostly customer driven. So when customers have a use case and we want to try and solve it, then we solve it in Atmos. What are some of the component types that would be appealing to you?
I don't know. I've worked in places that have we were doing Ansible playbooks for, specific running EC2 instance or running VMware stuff, whatever, So it's I'm new to Atmos, so I'm trying to figure it out. Beyond Terraform, what does the Atmos ecosphere look like? Long term, how is is this supposed to be one ring to rule them all kind of thing? You know what I mean? I'm not trying to be mean about it. I'm like, hey, like could the Atmos CLI actually be the one thing we need to rule all these other IAC or config management kind of things? I see the potential there, but it's what is your
That is
goal?
the vision. That is the big
Yeah.
picture vision, right? That this is the one tool to rule them all, kind of as if there could ever be just one tool. But I mean, that is the idea. How can we tie things th together in a consistent, cohesive way, similar to how frameworks have operated for a long time, and make that extensible so that it doesn't get in your way? And that's what I want Atmos to be. That's what we want Atmos to be. But our current focus is obviously very heavy in the Terraform OpenTofu space. We do support Helm file. We don't really use Helm file ourselves anymore. We
Like,
support.
have you looked at Crow yet? KRO?
Dude, KRO is awesome. Crow is awesome. Yeah, we talked about it in office hours. And boy, what an elegant implementation of custom resources on top of Kubernetes as a Helm kind of alternative. I agree. So this would be kind of developing an opinion for how those pieces fit together. We don't want to shove things into Atmos just to shove things into Atmos, if that makes sense. We want it to actually provide, a level of value on top of that. Where I see that immediately fitting in, for example, would be supporting CloudFormation as a way of managing CloudFormation in a monorepo, especially together with like that new functionality of the dash dash affected flag. Be pretty cool to use it for that. But yeah, that's the current state of it.
Cool. Thank you.
All right. We got about 10 more minutes. Any other questions we can answer today?
It's not really a question. I came in late and don't know if you discussed the Google Gemini-based CLI agent.
No, tell me about it.
Yeah, so going all the way back to Block's Goose tool, and I got the link in the chat if you want to get to the announcement there. But Goose, or rather Block released Goose, which is like a CLI-based AI coding assistant. Claude Code is another one that followed that. And then recently, I guess maybe as recent as yesterday or day before, Google released the Gemini CLI agent. I haven't touched any of them yet, but this is the one that has me interested in actually trying it out. And I'll kind of give a breakdown. So Goose ties into other agents, or rather other AI that you might have already, tapped into. Like you can use OpenAI, you can use other, AI providers. You give them the key, they connect, and it does its thing. Code Claude is geared towards Claude, so Anthropic. You give them your cache, you get your API key, you set that up. But and so you're kind of tied into their models. Gemini, similar thing. You're tied into Google's model, the Gemini model family or whatever. But number one, it's free. So you don't have to pay for any additional stuff. I mean, with Goose's, or rather with Block's Goose, it can be free if you're using a Llama or something like that, or if you're using like a freebase access to something where you're limiting your requests and everything, you know. But this just feels easier to me, if that makes sense, because I don't know, maybe I, and this could come with some salt, but maybe I trust Google more than some of the other providers. I don't know why, but I'm totally, you know, bought into the Google ecosystem. But I just feel like Gemini model's really gotten stronger over the past couple months. I'm getting comparable results from Gemini that I might expect from ChatGPT, which is kind of like the go-to. It's the Kleenex of AI, right?
Yeah.
But I feel good about